Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we as stone, the immaculate.
But listen to this, I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the
loss of God.
I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
You know, I'm so PO'd, I don't know if I can do the music thing tonight, so I'm going to open up the show with a little poetic license. To it.
Prosecutor has completed his opening statement. Defense counsel ready?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, Mr. Ford, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my name is Arthur Kirkland, and I am the defense counsel for the defendant, Judge Henry T. Fleming. Now, that man over there, he's the prosecuting attorney. And he couldn't be happier today. He is a happy man today because today he's going after a judge. And if he gets him, he's going to be a star. He's going to have his name in this month's law review, Centerfold, Lawyer of the Month. Now, in order to win this case, he needs you. Naturally, you're all he's got, believe me. So he's counting on tapping that emotion in you which says, let's get somebody in power. Let's get a judge. However, these proceedings are not about that. These proceedings are here to see that justice is done. And justice is, as any reasonable person would tell you, the finding of the truth. And what is the truth today? One truth, a tragic one, is that that girl has been beaten and raped. Another truth is that the prosecution doesn't have a witness, does not have one piece of substantiating evidence other than the testimony of the victim herself. Another truth is that my client voluntarily, and the prosecution is well aware of this fact, voluntarily took a lie detector test.
Objection, Your Honor, that's inadmissible evidence.
Well, come on, Arthur.
Tell the truth.
The jury will disregard that remark. Polygraph tests have not been proven 100% reliable, therefore inadmissible in a court of law.
Sorry, Your Honor. Let's get back to justice. What is justice? What is the intention of justice? The intention of justice is to see that the guilty people are proven guilty and that the innocent are freed. Simple, isn't it? Only it's not that simple. However, it is the defense counselor's duty to protect the rights of the individual, as it is the prosecution's duty to uphold and defend the laws of the state. Justice for all. Only we have a problem here. You know what it is? Both sides want to win. We want to win. We want to win regardless of the truth, and we want to win regardless of justice, regardless of who's guilty or innocent. Winning is everything. That man there wants to win so badly today. It means so much to him. He is so carried away with the prospect of winning, the idea that he forgot something that's absolutely essential to today's proceedings. He forgot his case. He forgot to bring it. I don't know. I don't see it. Do you? The prosecution's case. He's got to have one.
Not a witness. Not one piece of substantiating evidence other
worse than the testimony of the victim herself.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I have a case to end all cases.
I have witnesses for my client. I have character references, testimonials that are backed up from here to Washington, D.C. I got lie detector tests that are...
Sit down, Mr. Kirkland, you are out of order.
The one thing that bothered me, the one thing that stayed in my mind and I couldn't get rid of it, that haunted me, was why. Why would she lie? What was the motive for lying? If my client is innocent, she's lying. Why? Was it blackmail? No. Was it jealousy? No. Yesterday, I found out why. Doesn't have a motive. You know why? Because she's not lying. And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
If he's allowed to go free, then something really wrong is going on.
Mr. Kirkland, you are out of order.
You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order. They're out of order. That man, that crazy, depraved man, raped and raped that woman there, and he'd like to do it again. He told me so. Let's make a deal. Hey, Frank, you want to make a deal? I got an insane judge who likes to beat the shit out of women. What do you want to give me, Frank? 3 weeks probation? You son of a bitch, you. You're supposed to stand for something. You're supposed to protect people. But instead, you fucking murder a black cop. You kill McCullough. You killed him. Hold it. Hold it. I just completed my opening statement. And with that, I say welcome to another exciting edition of Soma Time.
John Forsythe and the band over there. Little Al Pacino to get me going here on a 5-0 Wednesday. I have freaking had it. I've had it, you people! Tired of doing this alone! Alone! Alone in the wilderness! Wailing at the freaking clouds up here! You know, the number to call to interrupt my distress. My distress. 64, whatever that word is. 646-478-4847. 646-478-4847. And justice for all, huh? Ain't happening. Ain't happening in a heartbeat. No. No, no, no. World ain't fair. World ain't fair at all. Oh, my God, is it not fair. Boy, you know, 30 years ago they shot Lennon. They. Mark David Chapman shot Lennon. But the culture really killed the Beatles, right? Before that. I don't know. Monday Night Football, Howard Cosell, this just in. You know, the whole thing. I remember it. I remember being upset. December 8th. Sitting there with my little dog. 1980. It's like a world before cable, I think. Maybe I'd just gotten cable. Now, it would have been tweeted, TMZ'd, Facebooked, you know, dig-dugged and everything else before it ever got to Howard Cosell's lips. Everything now exists to skag the other guy. On that theme, this just in on Mr. Assange from last week's episode of WikiLeaks. Kurt Nimmo reporting for Infowars.com, because there's a war on for your mind, Alex Jones site. We play a little extra. I'll play a little him later. It's like listening to Sam Kinison to me. So anyway, Kurt writes today, now that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is in custody, we can expect the U.S. government to request his extradition and prosecute the Australian for espionage. He's a spy. Any such proceedings would set up a test whether the First Amendment's protection for free press extends to a website with worldwide audiences. 1917, the United States enacted the Espionage Act, a law that has made it a crime to willfully communicate secret government information that could expose national secrets held by officialdom. That's a weird word. Since the law was passed, however, the government has avoided prosecuting journalists for publishing classified information. The First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the press has protected journalists in the past, though it's not clear whether the courts would consider Assange a journalist. I'll get to what Alex Jones thinks he is a little later, maybe. Assange, it's got a weird name. It's Assange. That's the way you spell it. His actions are not those of a responsible journalist who would enjoy the protection of the Constitution, opines Jeffrey Smith, former general counsel to the CIA. Real honest organization there. Hi, guys. Government, of course, will decide what is responsible and irresponsible journalism, and the High Court will enshrine this in law. This from the government that brought us the Valley Plain situation, right? The establishment, including its highest court, may even restrict the First Amendment and have its protection apply to selected corporate media journalists and other propaganda functionaries of the elite. Any such ruling by the Supreme Court will send a message to investigative journalists and alternative news organizations and publications. You'll be prosecuted for revealing government secrets. In short, you'll soon be illegal to report information the government wants to keep hidden from the American people. According to the Congressional Research Service analysis, the Supreme Court has not resolved the question of whether, in cases where information was acquired unlawfully by a newspaper or a source, government may ever punish not only the unlawful acquisition, but the ensuing publication as well. In 71, when the world was green, the Supreme Court rejected a Nixon administrative effort to stop the New York Times and the Washington Post from publishing the Pentagon Papers. Nixon's effort to prosecute leakers Daniel Ellsberg and the late Anthony Russo were not journalists, but RAND Corporation researchers, was dismissed due to prosecutorial misconduct. The Supremes, not Diana Ross and her friends, but the Supreme Court people, indicated that it would not be possible for the government to prosecute the newspapers involved. Freedom of speech is a basic U.S. constitutional right, notes Christian Science Monitor. Wow, there's a source. What Assange and WikiLeaks have done is set up a lawyer's dream of a case which would allow the Supreme Court to resolve a conflict between two basic rights, the right to speak and the right for the U.S. to hold close its secrets. The Obama administration has declared the WikiLeaks disclosures put at risk our diplomats, intelligence professionals, and people around the world who come to the United States for assistance in promoting democracy and open government. In fact, the disclosures put at risk the widespread government policy of withholding information from the American people. 2006, Patrice McDermott, director of the OpenGovernment.org site, said that every administration wants to control information about its policies and practices, but the current, this is the Bush administration, has restricted access to information about our government and its policies at unprecedented levels. Pucker up. The result has been the suppression of discussions about our country's direction and its securities. How can the public or even Congress make informed decisions about such circumstances? The movement away from public accountability must be reversed. This is 2006 talking back to us. A record number of Freedom of Information Act requests indicate government is becoming more secretive, not less. Declarations of transparency and open government notwithstanding, the Obama administration is continuing to a concerted effort to keep the American people in the dark about the operation of its government, especially in regard to foreign policy. never mind the idiocy of government officials and neocons such as William Kristol, who have called Emily for harassing, kidnapping, and neutralizing Julian Assange in the WikiLeaks operation. The ultimate result will be harass and neutralize the alternative media that continues to draw millions of people away from the government's propaganda disseminated by the corporate media. All right? In order to convert the United States into a third-world slave gulag with a high-tech police state overlay, the ruling elite will target and attempt to liquidate alternative media. I love that. Liquidate. Sounds a little messy. Eventually, extraditing and prosecuting Julian Assange as an enemy of the state is an important element in the effort to kill the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights. There you go, InfoWars, calmly communicating that little message. I don't know. I mean, I'm digging this guy, but I'm also kind of looking at it as he just seems to be kind of caught up. You don't really, the guy looks like, I don't know, like the Manchurian candidate kind of guy. He's like a puppet, kind of caught up in the mix. I don't look at him as being really relevant. I look at him as being sort of a, kind of a stooge, kind of a patsy. We'll see what happens with him. On the other side of the lot, I guess, you know, I mean, the WikiLeaks thing is to me, it's a weird fish because the Internet doesn't have, it's cowboy up there. It doesn't have the same rules as we do down here. But yet, is it equivalent to shouting, fire in a movie theater when you say your government is dealing with drug dealers and they're making all kinds of bribes and it makes us look bad, right? I think it's great, actually. I mentioned it last week in the interview with Douglas Rushkoff last week. And if you haven't bought his book yet for your holidays, tonight's the last night of Hanukkah. We got the Christmas season starting. Go out and get yourself programmed or be programmed by Douglas Rushkoff at rushkoff.com and enlighten your digital soul. All right? Just as an aside, because I can't get enough of the Rushkoff. Coming over tomorrow, we'll be hanging out here at the Soma Space, doing our thing. And I look at WikiLeaks like the latest thing to pop up out of the data sphere, like a whack-a-mole, that keeps revealing, like he was discussing last week, this sort of cybernetic truth serum that just, it will not lie to us. We lie to each other, like sieves, but the web won't lie. The web is so unattached to the outcome of what it causes because you can't put a fork in it. There's no way to disable it. There's no way to take it down. You know, it's like Skylab in the Terminator movies. You know, it has a life of its own. It's independent of us. That's why I discuss a lot on my website, somerspace.org, this notion of technical memes. You know, search engines, all these portable devices, they're all absorbing information that makes them more resourceful than the people putting the information in because it can talk to itself, see, independent of us. Databases do it. Encryption does it. All these things are going on parallel to our little world down here on the ground, which has a lot more constraints on it, by the way, than the digital world that's sort of out there in cyberspace. So that's really, to me, sort of an invisible terrain that descends on us like the locusts, because if you look around now, no matter what direction you turn, no matter what generation you look at, no matter what economic bracket you look at, no matter whatever cultural background you are, the digital world runs the analog world. It runs it like a vacuum cleaner. We can't do anything without the influence of this media. It's influencing everything, and it's exercising things. Newspapers popping down. Like I was telling somebody this afternoon, first it was the hospitals closing down. The next thing will be, You'll close down a lot of the community colleges. You'll close down a lot of the vocational schools. There won't be any money for these things. These programs, these state programs are drying up. You don't blame the web for that, but you look at the web as a way to accelerate the process where it would have took a generation or two. Now it's going down every couple of years. WikiLeaks exposing the banks, which is going to be the next wave of this, is right around the holidays. It's going to be a real little punch in the nads to the powers that be that are trying to stem the tide here as we go into a new Congress, you know, in January. And whatever the Republicans say, you know, please, You know, let me see. I'm a Republican champ.
You filthy criminals.
Yeah, I can't hear them anymore, okay? I can't. You are a pack of windbags. And if you don't believe me, just go back in the timeline and look at what the world was like pre-Obama, okay? Look at the last 2 years of the Bush administration when he did nothing. He did nothing. He sat on his ass and watched the counted it down. He couldn't wait to leave. He did nothing. After that, the reversal in 2006, Pelosi took over. He went vacation. Nothing changed. It was like cruise control all the way to the end. And then what happened? Pop, 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 pop. At the end of 2008, and all of a sudden you got old man, you know, McCain over there going, "Oh, everybody into the room now. We're going to fix this thing." And, you know, Obama's like, "What are you talking about, man? They're going to fix this thing in that room." And little do we know that, you know, a couple of years later, Obama's going to get the kick me sign on his back. Now, segue, Flippy, segue. I'm not very good at this anymore, but like I was ever good at it. See if I can get over here. Computer's in a good mood tonight. I don't know why. I don't know why they didn't deserve that. Let's see. Looking for a little detail about Obama and this. He did a decent job, I guess, for him, you know, being what he is. It was tough for him to do that with the tax thing yesterday, trying to straddle the extremes that he's been forced to deal with. Everything he's been trying to push through, it got okayed. There it is. Okay, yeah. Yeah, the compromise thing. I just want to see if there's a video of it. There's got to be a video of him talking. Kind of scolds his own party and stuff. Let's see if there's one on here. Announces framework for bipartisan. No, no.
I mean, he's right.
Shut up.
I mean, he's right now, given that it's still weak.
Shut up. You know, he's been forced to choose between the lesser of about three evils, really. I want to see if there's anything on here that I can. I'll go to the news side. Obama tax cuts. Here we go. We got videos right here. Is this the one I wanted? Yeah, his defense. This is his defense of the tax cuts. He kind of scolds both parties in a way here. This is so phony and so unsellable, but he tried. It's like that 50-something yard field goal the Jets tried before. Comic mischief. Hang on. We got to deal with the commercial bullshit here. God almighty. What a world. I swear to God, you get into heaven, there's probably a commercial before you get in. This brought to you by Soft Soap. Look at this. All right, here's Obama trying to defend himself, I guess. Let's see if he does a good job, Mr. Phony.
I am happy to be tested over the next several months about our ability to negotiate with Republicans.
One of the issues here at the end of the session, which is to make sure the American people's taxes don't go up at a time of 9.8% unemployment.
Our Republican colleagues are playing Santa Claus for millionaires, but Scrooge for the middle class.
If we're going to create conditions that are favorable to economic growth, we can't have taxes going up on our job creators, our small businesses.
Republicans are willing to hold hostage the middle class tax cut so they can get a tax cut for the very, very wealthy.
Our number one goal is to make it easier and cheaper for jobs.
My Republican friends, I think this is a good agreement because I know that they're swallowing some things that they don't like as well. To my Democratic friends, what I'd suggest is, let's make sure that we understand this is a long game.
All right, President Obama was on the offense this afternoon trying to defend his tax cut compromise and minimize the anger brewing, especially from members of his own party who feel abandoned by the White House. Now, it also seems that the bipartisan efforts between the president and the GOP have come and gone, feeling the heat from the left. The president used an obscene analogy to describe Republicans.
I've said before that I felt that the middle class tax cuts were being held hostage to the high-end tax cuts. I think it's tempting not to negotiate with hostage takers unless the hostage gets harmed. Then people will question the wisdom of that strategy. In this case, the hostage was the American people, and I was not willing to see them get harmed.
Wait a minute. Hostage takers? Good thing Republicans are not as thin-skinned as President Obama has proven to be. But despite the president's efforts this afternoon, Democratic leaders, they are still furious. The president's always compliant. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, well, she is particularly annoyed. And she said earlier, quote, "We have some unease. We didn't know a deal was going to be announced." Senator Harry Reid even went so far as to say his members wouldn't sign the compromise as is.
This is only a framework. It's up to the Congress to pass it. Some in my caucus still have concerns about this proposal, as I suspect some Republicans have concerns about it. We'll work with President and Congressional Republicans over the next many hours to address these concerns.
You know things are bad for the anointed ones when Speaker Pelosi and Senator Reid make such public comments, but what about the Republicans? Senator Mitch McConnell couldn't say for sure that he has the votes.
I think the vast majority of the members of the Republican Conference of the U.S. Senate feel that this is a step in the right direction, an important.
All right, I can't take any more of their BS. They're all lying. Every single one of those voices that you just heard.
You filthy criminals.
Phony. None of them care about what they're saying if you watch their faces. And I'm someone that does this all the time because, you know, being a somophile as I am, I care less about the words. I care more about the tone of the words. I care more about what the gestures are, facial expressions, all that fun stuff you see in that great show, Lie to Me. You know, and if you go to the site tonight on the link, I put Paul Ekman's book up there because that's what we're dealing with here. It's a BS culture. Can I fool you? Can I deceive you and myself at the same time? Phony, phony, phony. And Obama's the consummate somatic profile to do that, being an exo, because they're the only ones of the four that I discuss, looking at the four domains, the way we're wired, the only four ways we get wired, and he's at the extreme. He's a 9%er. He's an exosomatic brain. So he can predict and remember and manipulate and have parallel universes going on, and it's all very easy to him. It's all just like moving around things on a desktop. You watch some of these Antos or that stupid file there, or Hannity, he can't get it. He can't do it. He cannot pull off a lie and believe it himself. And what did the great Costanza say? Not a lie, if you believe it. So that's what you're seeing here. A bunch of people BSing themselves and then BSing you. The Republicans care about the middle class and unemployment. They thrive on it. The Democrats, the progressives, care about bringing money back to the little guy when they've been basically pampered by the higher income people their entire lives, especially some of these career politicians who have been basically bought and sold by big pharma and lobbyists and all the other garbage. None of them. I mean, where's Nader? Has Nader said anything about this? Let me see. I just got to see if Nader's still alive, because it bugs me that he doesn't talk out about this all the time. Now, there's an Anto with some teeth. He's not going to phony file you. Unbelievable. It really is. Ralph freaking Nader. I'm paging Ralph Nader to the podium. He's got to have something to say about this, doesn't he? Is he going completely into hiding? Anything, Ralph? Anything? There's nothing here. Ralph Nader for president in 2008. Are you kidding me? Vote Nader. Is that it? The Nader page? Government sale about GM stock. Here's Tuesday, December 7th. Letter to President Obama extending tax cuts. Okay, he's got a little statement on here. This is Ralph Nader. Nice little short letter, short and sweet. Dear President Obama, increasingly credible press reports say that you're going to join with the Republican minority in the Congress and support the two-year extension of the Bush tax cuts for the rich, capital R, along with the cuts for the 200,000 individual, $350,000 couples that the Democrats were favoring. It's become widely known as a habit of yours to concede or adopt both the Republican terms of policymaking and the Republican policies and programs. Enclosed is a recent column where I wrote an imaginary private letter from former President George W. Bush to you by way of providing examples of this recurrent practice. You may or may not know what extending the tax cuts for the rich, capital R, worsening the deficit and burdening the next generation with the fiscal obligations, not to mention further restricting your options for public works programs and employment, will do to your electoral base. For many of your 2008 voters, this will indeed be the last straw for any active support they might have considered providing you. It may be that you believe that trading off $120 billion in retained income for the rich, capital R, is worth persuading the Republicans to support $18 billion for an extension of unemployment benefits to people out of work. With your party controlling both the White House and the Congress until January 1st, 2011, that is a remarkable definition of political, moral, and strategic weakness that will signal even greater capitulations to the Republicans during the next 2 years. Remember McGregor Burns' distinction between a transformational leader and a transactional leader. A little inside intellectual joke there, I guess. Cecilia Roth Nader. Now, let's see. A lot of comments on this. No comments at all on this thing? Let's see. I want to check out this letter he wrote, the imaginary letter. After nearly 2 years out, I can imagine George W. Bush writing. This is from November 22nd, so it's after the onslaught of the election back in the beginning of November. I can imagine George W. Bush writing this to his successor, President Obama. Dear President Obama, as you know, I've been peddling my book Decision Points. This is as onto as it gets, and it's not phony. The thing about Ralph is he's too brutal about it. So he says, okay. As you know, I've been peddling my book Decision Points, and while doing interviews, people ask me what I think of the job you're doing. My answer is the same. He deserves to make decisions without criticism from me. It's a tough enough job as it is. Just want to see if there's any... No, I didn't think so. All right, well, if she comes in, we might have a surprise guest. I don't even want to get my hopes up. The world doesn't work that way for me. But their inquiries did prompt me to write you to privately express my continual admiration for the job you're doing. Amazing. I say privately because making my sentiments public would not do either of us any good, if you know what I mean. First, I can scarcely believe my good fortune as to how your foreign and military policies, continuity, was the word you used recently by my good friend Joe Lieberman, has protected my legacy. More than protected, you're proving yourself just as able, as I may sometimes even more so, to kick ass, as my daddy used to say. My pleasant surprise is darn near limitless. Your Justice Department has not pursued any actions against my people, not to mention Dick Cheney and I, that the civil liberties and human rights crowd seem to be baying for you to do. Overseas, I see all I see are five stars. You're roaring in Afghanistan, dispatching our great special forces into Yemen, saying, like me, that you'll go anywhere in the world to kill those terrorists. When you say you would assassinate American citizens abroad suspected of terrorism, that news came over the radio during breakfast when I was eating my shredded wheat, and I almost choked with amazement. You got cojones, buddy. I was hesitant about crossing the border into Pakistan, but you, man, are blasting away. Even Dick, who would say it publicly, told me he was impressed. Who wouldn't say it, but never say this publicly. Okay. The leftists are always trying to have your policies show me up negatively. Ha! They're having one hell of a tough time, aren't they? Me, state secrets. You, state secrets. Me, executive privilege. You, executive privilege. Me, stop the release of torture videos. You, back me up. Me, indefinite detention. You, indefinite detention. Me, extraordinary rendition. You, extraordinary rendition. Me, sending drones. You, sending tons more, flying 24-7. Me, just had to look the other way on collateral damage. You, doing the same, protesting our boys doing it. Protecting our boys doing it. Me, approving nighttime assassination raids. You, upping the ante, especially since General Petraeus took over. Me beefing up defense, you not skipping a beat. Me letting the CIA loose, you told them operate at large. Me demanding no pictures of our fallen troops, you doing the same, but allowing the families to go to Dover, which I should have done. There's one big difference. I never cracked a law book. You are a top Harvard lawyer and teacher of constitutional law, so when you do what I did, man, that's the word, legitimization. Praise be to God, domestically. Sure, you rag Wall Street, but you continued the big bailout of the bankers and their supporting cast. Sure, you're tougher with your words, and they deserve it. But I remember the Wall Streeters got drunk and got a hangover. That's what he said. What I get is a kick of how you handle the unions and libs who backed you with dreams of hope and change. How smoothly you let them learn they got nowhere to go, just as we used to tell our conservative wing the same thing. So now they've been reborn as a growling tea party. So So, card check, single payer, rolling back my party's passage of legislation in Congress, you made them forget it. You've been a great president, backing me on so many things, keeping my most tax cuts and shelters, support my oil and gas buddies, my base, big loan guarantees for nukes, keeping Uncle Sam from bargaining down Big Pharma, expanding free trade, not going tough on China, my daddy especially liked that one, avoiding class struggle rhetoric, and so on. So you want to know how confident I am about you? Even though you were called waterboarding torture, I proudly admitted approving it, its use to protect our country and its freedoms. Isn't that really what presidency is all about, along with honoring our troops and the entire national defense effort? Semper Fi, George W. Bush. P.S., my mother Barbara's a big fan. She calls your term so far Obama Bush. Cute, eh? For someone who was never a wordsmith. There you go. Little Ralph Nader to whet your appetite. I can't get over how lame the whole thing looks to me. The whole thing looks lame. Lame, lamity lame. And it doesn't seem to have any sign of coming out of its stupor. So you kind of cascade down from that really serious thing, okay? You know, our money, our government, WikiLeaks, you know. And you got to find somewhat of a happy medium, right? So where do you go? You go to baseball, of course. Derek Jeter, another phony bastard, was reintroduced to the Yankees yesterday. Let's see if I can find this phony little press conference here. Oh, here it is. All right. See if you can handle this level of BS. Let's see.
I would like to welcome those of you.
I move along here. Let me get the Jeter. God. Him and Cashman fighting over their legacies. Boring as hell. Listen to this phony Anta. Here he comes. Girardi. Girardi actually said something? I didn't even hear that. Let me see. Girardi. They wheeled him out for.
Coaching Derek and managing Derek. And he is a true Yankee. He embodies what the Yankees are all about. Class, loyalty, championships, hard work, desire, passion for the game. And we're all fortunate that he's back. I think we were all anticipating this was going to happen. It was just a matter of when, and I'm glad it's over. And, you know, I'm fortunate I get to manage a guy like Derek. You know, for me it's 3 years, but I know he's probably going to play a lot longer than that. But we're really glad to have him back, and I appreciate everything he does on the field, off the field, and in our clubhouse. And Derek Jeter, a great Yankee. Derek?
Number two, Derek Jeter.
No, I've never had one of these before. I guess it goes without saying, you know, this is the only organization that I've ever wanted to play for. This is the only organization that I want to play for, and this is where I want to finish my career. I've been vocal about that since day one. So I want to thank the Steinbrenner family for welcoming me back. I guess, like you said a little while ago, I don't know if you can really say welcome me back because I didn't go anywhere. But, you know, I appreciate it was my hope to have this in New York, but for other circumstances, we had to come down here to the warm weather in Tampa. So it feels good to be here. I will open this to any questions. I know there's a lot of questions out there. You know, I've never spoke on this situation, and look forward to answering any questions you have.
Derek, as this whole process unfolded, was there even one moment where you ever thought you were not going to be a Yankee again?
No, there wasn't, because, you know, I was vocal with you guys, I think, right here in this tent and beginning of spring training, and I said this is the only organization I want to play for. I said that at the end of the season. I said that in private meetings I've had with the Yankee organization, and I had never planned on going anywhere. I didn't want to talk to any other teams. I didn't want to hear from any other teams. I told Casey that. So this was a situation where this is the only team I ever want to play for, contrary to some other reports.
Derek, Casey spoke out a couple of times, and I'm assuming that's in with your cooperation there. At what level of frustration did you reach as you start? There was a house at the beginning, it could get messy. They did get a little messy. How frustrating was that?
Well, I think that the thing that you know, if I'm going to be honest with you guys, the thing that probably bothered me the most was how public this became. You know, this was a negotiations. The negotiations were supposed to be private. So I was in an uncomfortable position. I felt that I was in. It was not an enjoyable experience because throughout the years, I've prided myself on keeping things out of the papers and out of the media, and this turned into a big public thing. So that was something I was not happy about, and I let my feelings be known. So this whole situation is when you talk about free agency, I never wanted to be a free agent. You know, it's the situation that I was in. But I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't angry at how some of this went.
All right, he's lying all the whole time, but, he'd be lying to you if he told you he wasn't angry, because you can see he's furious. You see his eyes popping out of his head as he's saying these things. There's a big whopper coming up here in a minute. I don't want to wait for that.
You were photoshopped in the New York papers in a Mets uniform, in a Phillies uniform, in a Red Sox uniform. Now that this process is over, Derek, in your wildest imagination, heart of hearts, could you have ever imagined playing for somebody else?
Well, I've been photoshopped in a lot worse pictures than other teams' uniforms throughout the years, so I don't know if really that's that bad, but I've said it, like I've said time and time again, I've never wanted to go anywhere. I can't stress that enough. You know, this is the best organization in all the sports. We have the greatest fans in the world, and I'd never wanted to go anywhere else. So I know, you talk about this being a negotiation. We understand it's a negotiation, but I wasn't negotiating with anybody. You know, it was just basically talking with the organization I wanted to play for.
Sweet. You said you'd be lying if you said you weren't angry. Who are you angry at? Who did you express that anger towards?
Most angry at you, Sweeney. it's really, I'm not standing up here. I'm not going to point the finger at anyone. You can see we're one big happy family now. Everyone's up here at the podium. I was more angry at the process and how it was portrayed because,
All right, there he is. He's full of crap right there. Right there, the phony Philo. Happy family. My ass! He was seething! Seething! He looked like a lizard talking there to Sweeney, the poor little Philo. Who were you angry at, Derek? Why were you angry? See, what we're dealing with here, and this is what, Sports Talk Radio has been buzzing on for like 2 weeks now, since like I guess a week before Thanksgiving, really, is that you have three things at play here. You have a player, you have a team, and you have a brand, I hate that word, and the image of that player wrapped in that brand. It's sort of like raisins and raisin toast. You know, a little cinnamon raisin toast with a swirl? Very good. Good butter. And Jeter is those raisins. He's one of those raisins, one of the juicy ones. And so if they pluck him out and say, find another loaf, Derek, he feels like just a little abandoned little raisin over there. But a mad raisin, very angry raisin. So when he's put back into the cinnamon roll, he's now one big happy family again, but only because he got a pound of flesh out of the Yankees a little bit, went from 45 to 61 million. Does that really fix it? No. He's pissed that his image now, he looks like a greedy slob. Because he is. He's a prize baseball player. He's not playing for free. He's not playing for charity. He's not playing because he loves the game. He's playing because he wants the prize. The prize is millions and millions to the tune of $250 million. And what do we do out here? We worship him. We give him iconic status. He's a great Yankee. What does that mean, a true Yankee? What does that mean? Cashed a bunch of paychecks? Won a bunch of World Series? He's an entertainer, no different than some sape that's hoofing it on Broadway right now. He is no different than a musician that's touring, no different than anybody that you spend your time watching perform. He's a performer, a trained seal, an athlete, right? But we romanticize these people because of the phony Philo element. We want to think we're bonding with them. We want to think that Derek loves us. And every time he loves the fans, he loves the... No. If you've ever dealt with an artist, a performer in any field, the only thing they love is themselves and their last performance, they hope. That's it. And usually it's neck and neck between those two things. Because they live in a world of peaks and valleys. They live in a world where you could be Alan, you could be that dude Haynesworth from the Redskins, right? $100 million contract, fights with the coach, and he's basically sent home. You know, does he have any shame? No, he still has the money. He didn't even have to perform for it, right? Perfect example. Let's see if I could find something on the Denver coach. That was interesting. Josh Daniels. See, a couple weeks ago, there was sort of a little scandal in the NFL over in Europe when Josh Daniels, his team, the Denver Broncos, let's see if I can find it here. Denver. His youngest coach in the NFL worked for Belichick over there in New England. And, you know, they have a little stink on him. Say, this is a year ago. Can't believe there's nothing on this guy since he got fired. Wow, that's amazing. Well, anyway, he's the youngest coach in the league. And, here's one from last Thanksgiving when the Giants were out of it. Here's a great Josh McDaniels moment here. Oh, I should do Josh McDaniels. How about that? Well, I'll play this first. This is classic. They didn't expect us to get on the air. It just sums up
beautiful
the NFL.
Thanksgiving evening here in Denver, but not happy times for head coach Josh McDaniels.
All we're trying to do is win a lot of fucking games.
Right? 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 Right?
Right? Right?
Josh McDaniels pretty livid at his ball club.
All we're trying to do is win a lot of fucking games. All we're trying to do is win a lot of fucking games.
There you go. Josh McDaniels. What did that guy say before during the movie? It's all about winning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's pretty weird. So, let's see. They have a song here. Okay, I'll play the song. They have a song of this guy. What? I'm verified. What? What are you talking about? I got to sign in now to hear this dopey song? Fine, I'll sign in. What the heck is my thing? Okay, here you go. Tremendous. It's a song of him cursing. Okay, I'll play it. Not much of a damn song. All right, anyway, he got canned because of the Spygate thing, because, again, he damaged the brand of the Broncos. And so, we just stopped with the game. And it led to... you know, again, the team was losing. He started off 6-0, and then I think he won, like, five games of the next, like, 20-something games. And that, as they say, was that. So here's his professional funeral here. Wow. Again, the phoniness. The owner of the team, Pat Bowlen, gave him a vote of confidence coming out of the thing in Europe when they had to fire the videographer to tape in the walkthrough of the 49ers. Which very much mimics what happened with the Jets and the Patriots, and what happened with the Pats and the Super Bowl, you know, taping the workout of the Rams. Everybody's trying to steal everybody else's stuff because, you know, it's fair. Everything's fair. No, it's not. Nothing's fair. Nothing is fair. Get over it. Here's the professional funeral of Josh McDaniels, Mr. Honesty.
Adam, what can you tell us? What's going on?
The Denver Broncos have decided to make a change at head coach, Jay. Broncos owner Pat Bowlen, a short time ago, relieved Josh McDaniels of his head coaching duties. And clearly Josh McDaniels had been on thin ice ever since the videotaping incident in London, where the Broncos were caught videotaping a 49ers walk-through practice. This is something that resonated within the Broncos organization. Lots of discontent. The Broncos go out and lose to the Chiefs yesterday. And today, Pat Bowlen decides to make a decision that really was in the makings ever since the NFL.
Wait a damn minute. He decided to make a decision? Come on, man.
Found the Broncos guilty of the videotaping incident.
They're 3-9. You talk about that incident. Is there anything else that gave you any indication that this might be coming along?
Yeah, this was something that clearly was the Broncos were thinking about. It was something that they were unhappy about what happened in London. But again, now Josh McDaniels still has 2 more years left on his contract next year, which means the Broncos are going to be paying 3 head coaches next year in 2011 during a potential work stoppage, and they'll be paying at least 2 coaches in the year 2012. But Pat Bowlen looked at his franchise and decided ultimately, 1 week after saying that he would keep Josh McDaniels on, that he could not live with this arrangement the way it was. He had to make a change, and thus they relieved Josh McDaniels of his duties this afternoon.
So how?
All right, so you hear that again. Phony, phony, phony. So when you bond with a team, or when you bond with a political party, or do you bond with a particular worldview, it has you, you don't have it. Because it, like cyberspace, isn't attached to you. You're attached to it. Therefore, it becomes part of your identity, and then you have to live with it no matter what it does to you. Really. No matter what it eats up your life, no matter what it is. Unless you're able to get a little more somatic awareness and realize that you do not have to obligate yourself to these chachooches. Chachooches. Got another example here. What the hell was it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is even more classic. I'm going to go to the WFAN site for this because my good friend Craig Carton is going to fess up to us here, who is a consummate phony. Phony, phony. But, again, entertainment, it's like a movie. You're not supposed to believe it. You're supposed to just have an experience. That's all. That's all. Don't analyze it. Oh, wait, this just in. NFL completes Favre Sterger investigation. I need a sound for that one. Here we go.
Bozzy, bozzy, bop. City bop.
That's right. All right, let's see what that's about. That's a little detour. You remember Jen Sterger, her of the photos of Mr. Favre's matter in his hands here. The lawyer for the former Jet game hostess who allegedly received inappropriate messages and photos of Brett Favre says the NFL's investigation in the matter is complete. Doesn't mean that it's happening. I mean, the guy's got like 3 or 4 games left. He's going to retire. What could they possibly do to him? Nothing. We're not ruling out this week. We're ruling out next week when the decision might be. Wait, what the hell is this? So they're going to say something when he has like 3 games to go? Conway's the lawyer. Conway's no timetable for an announcement. Well, good of you. Sterger's out of a job, by the way. That's classic. Absolutely classic. I don't know, man. I don't know what else to say. Oh, here we go. Despicable. Yeah, this is it. You're despicable. Let's see. Ooh, what the hell is that? Susan Waldman. Is that her? I guess so. Barbecue sauce. Yeah, okay, here we go. Okay. Well, if you haven't followed this story yet, about a month ago, the Miami Dolphins contacted the New York Giants to see if they could use their facility. to get used to the cold weather before the Jet Dolphin game coming up this weekend. All right, and the Giants said sure. Now the Jets didn't know about it, which is a little weird. The Jets weren't even brought in on this, because you would think, as a courtesy to the Jets, they're supposed to have this kind of brotherhood, sharing the Meadowlands, build it together, a couple-billion-dollar stadium. We're going to be partners. We're partners. I got you back, Jets. And the Giants says, screw that. I don't care about you. Don't be Jets. Uppity Jets. And so they said, sure, Dolphins, come on up and use our facility. I find it really funny because I hate the freaking Jets. I hate them with a passion, the green slime. I enjoyed Monday night's beatdown every second of it, even though I can't stand and equally loathe the Patriots. That's a separate issue. But my God, was the phony outrage in vogue this morning on FAN with Mr. Garden here. Now, before I play this clip, I think we're going to go live to Madison Square Garden because the Knicks are trying to blow a game here against the Toronto Raptors. I'm going to walk over. I can't even see the damn score anymore. My eyes don't work. Let's see. Oh, he rains in a three. Was that a three? Nope, just a two. So the Knicks are up by 3 points with about a minute 20 to go. Let's go live to MSG. The Olay defense. It's a one-point game with 1:12 to go. This team plays no defense at all. Zero. And then they'll shoot like in 10 seconds now. 17 on the clock. Oh! Guys, freaking Bob McAdoo. It's insane. I love this dude in the Knicks with the big freaking beard, Rastafarian beard. Knicks by three here with 57.3 to go. So we'll take a break from that. Here, a little of Carton here, riffing on the Giants and Jet thing. Because, again, it's all designed to manipulate those who are attached. If you're attached, you get a hook in your mouth and away you go. Here's a little Craig Carton.
All right, what are we doing, shifting the football now?
We are shifting to football. A story that's getting no play anywhere in the world but right here with Boomer and Carton. A story that will forever separate the Giant fan from the Jet fan. The Hatfields and the McCoys. The Montagues and the... All right. This is oil, this is water. This is black, this is white. This is up, this is down. This is a Katy Perry song, essentially, all right?
Okay, it's hot, it's cold.
Thank you.
Yes.
Are you ready?
East, it's west. Yes, I'm ready.
North and south.
Your turn.
here we go. The Miami Dolphins called the New York Giants up and said, hello!
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
Why would they do that?
They were concerned about playing the Jets this Sunday in inclement, cold, wintry, windy conditions. So they've made a decision, the Dolphins have, that instead of coming up on Saturday when most teams travel, day before a game, they're going to come up to New Jersey Friday morning, and they ask the Giants if they could use their facility practice in the cold to get them more prepared for the conditions when they play the Jets Sunday afternoon.
So what about home field advantage?
The New York Giants said, you got it. Red carpet, open door, carte blanche, whatever is ours is yours. Please beat the New York Jets.
Where are the Giants going to be during?
Hold the phone. Knicks are going for the win here. The game is tied. Last 10 seconds of regulation. Here we go. You gotta be kidding me. That thing bounced around up there three or four times and rolled in with 2:07 to go. Wow! Hooray! My deep trance identification with the New York Knicks is fed. All is well. Oh, my heart's a thumping. Jubilant crowd. I mean, this thing was a prayer. Throw shit up from the top of the key here. Unbelievable. The ball hits the front rim, the backboard, the side rim, the backboard, the front rim, and rolls in. What a shot. Look at the people behind the basket here. Hilarious. Bing, bong, bingity, boom, bump, bump, and a boom, bong in. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is a team that's really done nothing for 10 years. Talk about abandoning your fan base like the Mets. Oh, my God. The guys on the bench have a reaction like the people in the stands. They can't believe it either. Now, Nick teams of the past. Oh, look, good. Jason Tucker's there doing his $5 footlong stance. What is he doing? Jason Tucker's doing the $5 football Subway sandwich song. Man, that guy's got some carny hands, too. Oh, my God. Look at him dribbling. This guy Felton is unbelievable, by the way. He throws up these rainbows. Look at this. Think bonkity boom bonk in. Amazing. 2.7 left. Yeah, don't foul the guy while he shoots the three. I don't understand why that's always a debate with these guys. You just... Yeah. That's it. Tell him, Clyde. Man, I'm loving this. Here comes the Rastafarian dude. Play defense here. I mean, that's a beard you see on like one of those cab drivers, you know, that you're wondering. You're just wondering. No one's saying anything. We're just wondering. Wonder. All right, 2.7 left. Knicks trying to get a win at home. Go to, 14-9 if they win this one. This is amazing. Of course, they'll have a tying basket before that, but... See what happens here. 2.7 left. Live from the Garden.
They get to Borgnani. He might not have get it off. Calls it up. Oh! Off the mark, and the Knicks win again. They're six in a row. A thriller here at the Garden.
The lame-o shot from about almost mid-court. Stoudemire is Bob freaking McAdoo, to tell you the truth. And Felton hits this rainbow. An absolute rainbow. The radio call, that's going to be better than the TV call. Knicks get the W right at 10:02 here on Summertime. All right, let's get back to Carton and his BS here. Let's see what I did with that. Rolling down the hill, rolling. Here it is. Carton continues.
Part Blanche, whatever is ours is yours. Please beat the New York Jets.
Where are the Giants going to be during this whole time? Are they going to scrimmage on Friday with the Jets? I mean, with the Dolphins, or what's going to go on?
The New York Giants are welcoming the enemy of the Jets into their facility to give them a full day and a half to get comfortable in the conditions and the weather to give them a better shot at beating the New York Jets.
I don't like it.
I don't like it one little bit. It's fool you know what?
Yep.
It's wrong. They should be smacked in the face for doing it. It's war now where I come from. You have disrespected yourselves, the good name of Wellington Mara, and you've done the unthinkable. You don't let another team use
sorry, email.
To get an upper edge over a fellow New York team. It's despicable that they've allowed this to happen.
So now,
they condoned it and welcomed it into town.
So you're telling me...
Go ahead.
...that the Miami Dolphins are going to board a plane when?
Friday morning.
Okay, they're going to get here Friday afternoon.
The latest.
Right, and then what?
They're going to go right over to the Timex facility.
Right.
And which is connected to what?
The Meadowlands.
And the Giants have granted them full access to everything they want. Indoor, outdoor, field, wind, weather, you name it.
I don't like it.
I've never heard of it
before. I don't like it.
B, it's wrong. And if I'm the New York Jets and I find out that the New York Giants are giving my next opponent a little sneaky advantage by letting them use your facilities and coming up here early, I'd be livid about it.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely livid. We share a stadium together. We are in many, many ways brothers, right?
You would think so.
We share the marketplace together.
Right.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
We built that terrible stadium together.
That's right. Right. And look how you do me now. Come down here and practice.
Sorry about that.
Go, Brodhead! A bunch of no-good douches is what that organization is with this disgusting move.
Yeah, you don't like it.
Now, I'll put it out there, fans. I'm sure Giant fans love it, and I know how Jet fans
now, why
feel,
would Giant,
one of them.
Why would Giant fans love it?
Because Giant fans, for 50 years, have owned this town.
Right.
And for 9 months, the Jets have been the talk of the town, starting with Hard Knocks and Rexroy and everything else.
And you really...
And Giant fans hated, just like Yankee fans hated the mid-'80s with the Mets. You know that.
I mean, you get all caught up in this stuff.
I don't like it. Boom, in your life, have you ever heard about that?
I've never heard about that.
Right. Now, I know in playoff times, like when I traveled with the Eagles back in the day, and the Eagles had a playoff game against Dallas, they flew...
What happened there? Typical FAN site. I don't know. You get the point. The hell would have... You know... Damn thing. What I'm trying to get at here is more phoniness. If you get caught up in it, this is how those things work, and especially because it's cyber. It's everywhere. It feeds on itself. It's a fake experience, a substitute experience, and it takes you away from the real deal, which can be, you know, redundant and boring. So just like this piece of chalk in my mouth, it becomes a little bit of media candy, something for you to chew on, maybe. Mm. And because of it's so appetizing, it's so irresistible, you pick at it all day long. It's like turkey sandwiches on Thanksgiving. You go back, and you go back, and you go back. Nothing. You don't matter to the Jets and Giants. You don't even matter to the NFL. You don't matter. Just like I told you before with Jeter. I told you before with Obama. I told you before with Josh Daniels. None of it. It's all meant to entertain you. It's all meant to confuse you and make you go, ooh, just like when you go to the movies, just like when you go to the amusement park, just like when you go on vacation. Right? It's an exaggeration of the mundane. We're so lame. Our imaginations are so pathetic that we have to have this fake circus all around us, politically, music world, movies, entertainment, all kinds of crap, to keep us from going insane. Because if we look at the real picture, I'll get to that now. If you really want to get some fun here, I'll give you a little Alex Jones to think about before I get to my little somatic tips for the week. Let's see. Videos. Oh, to the links. Psychiatrist on payroll of Glaxo pleads guilty to research fraud. Well, I wonder about that. Paid him $5,000 every child he enrolled. And putting kids on Paxil. It's 13 months. Unbelievable. H1N1 vaccine linked to 700% increase in miscarriages in naturalnews.com. Let's go gloss over that. Unbelievable. Let's see. Boy. Ooh. All right. Well, what's this one? Donny Epstein. More on epigenetics, non-synaptic signaling. Ooh, January. Ooh. Yeah. Don't put me on there, rat bastards. Let's see. What is this? No. Rudolph. This is just, I'm just scrolling through my Facebook links. I'm trying to find something here. Wow. Five truly awful landing pages. Yeah.
What's this? Scientists find molecular glue needed to wire the brain. That's in physorg.com. A single molecule connects the brain cells and shows how we learn. The 7th issue of the journal Neuron helps researchers discover ways to improve memory. Wow. That's pretty wild. Learn it as an experience. Learn NLP, some guy says. Here's WikiLeaks. I'm getting close. Oh, boy. This is tedious. Where is this dude? Tell you what, it's probably faster just to put his name in there. Wow. All right, we'll go this way. We'll go this way. Let's see. It was, Alex Jones, right? Yeah. I wanted to get that out there about... So here it is, Hidden Agenda. Okay. A little talk on a... I love listening to Alex Jones' take on these things because it just cracks me the F up. I mean, like I said, who is this Assange guy? Why did you... You know, he literally just fell out of the sky. Let's see if I can find a part of the clip where he asked directly to this other you know, InfoWars dude, you know, about, well, who is this guy and what does he want? And everybody is basically a puppet of somebody else, you know, which is hilarious. So,
but now let's look at today. We have the element of personal contact.
All right, it's all the way at the end here. Let's see.
That, right? The echelon.
Body runs around like chick.
Think about
Soros connections. Who's above Soros? It's cut off. We can get more.
The U.S.
Body runs around like chicken.
Here we go, a little Alex Jones.
Fox News, everybody runs around like chickens with their heads cut off. We can get more into this in the next hour, Tarpley, ahead of the economic analysis I want to break down with you. But briefly, before this hour ends, who is Assange and the Soros connections? Who's above Soros?
Okay, first of all, Assange. Think MK Ultra. This guy, as far as I can see, is a product of MK Ultra. In other words, he's a zombie, an operative created by a sex brainwashing psychopharmaca LSD cult in the neighborhood of Melbourne, Australia, back in the 1970s.
That's actually come out, yeah.
Yeah, it's the Anne Hamilton Byrne cult. And one of his parents was involved in the cult. He seems to have grown up in the periphery of the cult. Very interesting aspect is that the children in the cult were all adopted by this guru of LSD and fornication among children, Anne Hamilton Byrne. She gave them all her own name, and she dyed their hair blonde. Notice that when Assange came on the scene, he was a blonde. He's no longer blonde. He's letting the roots grow out. Now he's becoming a brunette. I think it was the idea that the blonde hair called a lot of attention to the fact that he was something strange about the guy, and indeed I think there's a lot strange. So you then see him as part of a hacker community, and he hacks into National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Now, why target them? I mean, what do they do that's so bad? He writes a book in which he appears as Mendax, Latin word for liar. So he's an operative. I think he's a psychotic. I think he's a zombie. And now he is the media darling of the world. Notice that we have a consortium. We have the New York Times. We have the London Guardian. We have El País. We have, I think, Le Monde and Forbes magazine. He is now the darling of the Anglo-American media establishment. He's the new star, the new Ellsberg.
All right, stay there, Webster. I want to get directly into George Soros and where you see this going, because,
right,
as you said almost a year ago, look for them after they build street cred to start attacking certain brokerage firms and banks. Now he's announced that's what's coming next. I mean, is he a useful idiot, or does he know he's an operative because you've listed the names? This Soros coterie surrounds him. Then we'll get into trillions of dollars being pumped into private corporations and media of your tax money secretly. Think about the magnitude of that. We'll be right back with the second hour. InfoWars.com.
After this, the world is coming to an end with a little music in the background. Are you kidding? The whole thing is a sham.
phony.
What the fuck was he talking about?
That's right. You know, even Steinbrenner doesn't understand.
Anyway, as I was lying in the puddle, I think I may have found a way for us to get Bonds and Griffey, and we wouldn't have to give up that much.
Well, don't tell it to me, George. Tell it to the new assistant to the general manager.
I didn't get the job.
Well, once you were dead, we couldn't just sit on our hands. We got to make a move. But you still have your old job. Of course, we'll have to dock you for the time you missed. We're running the ball club here. If I give special treatment to you, everyone will want it. Next thing you know, it's chaos. And I can tell you this. Chaos does not work for the New York Yankees. Not as long as I'm running the show.
Well, apparently, according to our good friend Mike Silva, neither will Cliff Lee. Mm-hmm. Texas has the inside track. Yankees are believed to be less than 50% the odds now as they want the meetings closed down in Orlando. So, again, you can follow any of these soap operas. They always lead to the same whispering little end. They leave you nowhere, man. Nowhere, man. Nowhere, man. Nowhere, man. Hey, sounds like a Beatles song. But before I do that, let me rush back over here and give you a little woo. Because on Monday night, we were over at the restaurant there in the beautiful downtown Port Chester. And I had a little class, had our little, our second really official class of the Shortcut to the Sanity, Woo Maps 2, I believe. STS, Woo Maps 2, STS. And we were discussing fear and how it takes over the different domains during this time of the year and all the things that go on. So I figured I'd share with you guys a little bit. Here's a link. It's called somaspace.org/stswomaps2.html. Or just, you know, find me over here. I'll give you the damn link, you know. But here's a little woo-woo for you. As we close out the show
woo-woo
here.
You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masters.
That decoration, man.
Yeah.
Just for decoration.
That's right. Just for decoration. Anyway, a couple of things. We talked about it. Now, this is something. I'll give you the skinny on it. I've probably seen every map that the Woo puts out, you know, healing maps, whatever you want to call it. And this time of the year, as we transition from fall into winter, one of the ones we do is called the Frozen Finger. And basically, it's sort of a riff on the discipline of Jinsen Jitsu that have these fast fixes, you know, that use your meridians and use the energy that passes through your fingertips as a way to ground certain emotions. So you just take the palm, take your non-dominant hand. I'm a righty, so you hold up your left hand. You look at your left hand. The thumb is stands for worry, and then the other four fingers, create the word fast, right? Index finger F for fear, middle finger A for anger, ring finger S for sadness, and the pinky for trying too hard, or, you know, it's kind of, you know, known in the trade as pretension. You know, you're overdoing it, right? So there's just a lot there, and what, you know, I created, there's a bunch of mudras you can do, using the fingers, but the frozen finger thing, and the Woo Maps, STS Woo Maps 2, that HTML talks about that. So if you want that link, just get a hold of me at nakedsoma@gmail.com. I'll send you the link, or listen back to the show and spell it out. Like I said, somaspace.org/STSWOMAPS2.html. I might put it on the homepage. I don't know. Anyway, long story short is that there's easy ways to get past these emotions without having to go to Paxil and all the other stuff. Use your intelligence, my people. So what you can do is just grab the thumb of your non-dominant hand with your other hand and just breathe, baby. That's all it takes. A little pulse in the tip of the finger, and you go on to the index finger. Do the same thing for the rest of the hand, then switch hands. Do the same thing from thumb to pinky on the other hand. And in little more than a minute and a half, 2 minutes, you have dissipated worry, fear, anger, sadness, and effort, trying too hard. So when you get a redundant thought, all you OCDers out there, all you worry warts out there, all you fear mongers out there, all you angry bastards out there, all you sad and languishing sapes out there, you're just a couple of minutes away from getting that process. Like I said before, you don't get mad, mad gets you. The emotions get you, the worldview gets you, the ideas get you. You have to have a way to
feedback to it so that it doesn't stick. Because once it gets through into the core of the soma, it becomes part of the way you identify with the world. And that conversation you have with that carrier frequency out there in the environment that is your identity. By the way, your identity is not in your body. It's not in your genes, it's not in your, not in your cells, not anywhere in your system at all. It is a free-floating environmental signal. It's a vibration situation up there in the universe. And you are the only radio that picks it up, this little flesh pot you're in. Can you imagine that? Out of all the oceans of waves and waves of waving, you are the only one that picks up that signal. Now, if you clog it with all the crap that's at the bottom of the funnel down here in the TMZ world, you tune it out and you become a zombie, like the, what that guy said, for all the crap that goes on down here, the lower dimensions. So why would you want to, if you could tune in to this grand conversation you're having with the cosmos instead of this local one you're having with this mud puddle called Earth? Get off your asses. All you got to do is squeeze a finger and breathe. Got to keep our composure. Keep our composure. So there's my little woo rant for the week. And again, on that page, I also talk about the assemblage point. If any of you guys have partaken of the fancy, Carlos Castaneda from the 80s, one of my first woo introductions, Journey to Ixalan, you know, Eagle's Nest, all that stuff. The assemblage point basically is just very similar to being able to sense energy over the heart chakra, things like that, but it's a little different because it tends to get you into what they call second attention, which is your dream life, which, as the Aboriginals say in Australia, is real. And this waking life, this trance that we're in during the day, is what we perceive to be our dream world like when we're sleeping. It's this massive hypnotic experience that isn't as real as we think it is. So who knows? Who knows who's right, who's wrong on that one? You know? So, I don't know. I think I'm kind of out of wood here. All out of wood. No, can't burn no more. Can't burn no more. So I'm going to go head back over here to my trusty YouTube here. All out of wood. Let's see. We'll go this away. Yeah, we'll play that first. A little Scent of a Woman here, right? We open with Al. We'll close with Al. Al Pacino. Oops, sorry. Scent of a Woman. He has a lot of speeches. In one of his movies. Let's see. The one I had before was probably... This is it. Okay. It's about a six-minute speech. Kind of sums up my thoughts. I mean, again, we've been talking a lot about the phoniness that's out there. As you go out in the holidays and you go out and you meet strangers, don't just give them that passive, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, phony. Shake their hand, look them in the eye, say your damn name, connect. The ground is all we have left. If we get dismissive of that, we're just the same as the zombie that the guy with WikiLeaks is, man. We got nothing left to do except breathe and poop and die. And I'm not good at two out of three of those these days. So if you see me on the street, say hello. Press the flesh. Say hello. Connect eyes to eyes. Take a breath with somebody. Because I'm telling you what, we don't know what's coming around the corner. We don't even know if we care what's coming around the corner. We're so routinized and so predictable in every little twitch we do that the media zaps us with. I always think of that experiment with the frog I did in high school with the little jumper muscle, and you twitch it with the electrode and the thing would sit there and twitch at you. That's kind of what we are. Pack of lizards. Boring as hell. Ooh, fear. Ooh, war. Ooh, money. Ooh, come on. I just told you your identity is an airborne environmental signal that's in the cosmos. And you're worried about goddamn cheater. Anyway, I'll let Al talk now. See if he's got a little better way of saying this.
I am left with no real witness. Mr. Willis's testimony is not only vague, it is unsubstantiated. The substance I was looking for, Mr. Sims, was to come from you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry too, Mr. Sims. I'm going to do in as much as I can't punish Mr. Havemeyer, Mr. Potter, or Mr. Jameson, and I won't punish Mr. Willis. He's the only party to this incident who is still worthy of calling himself a bared man. I'm going to recommend to the disciplinary committee that you be expelled. Mr. Sims, you are a cover-up artist and you are a liar.
But not a snitch!
Excuse me?
No, I don't think I will.
Mr. Slade.
This is such a crock of shit!
Please watch your language, Mr. Slade. You are in the Baird School, not a barracks. Mr. Sims, I will give you one final opportunity to speak up.
Mr. Sims doesn't want it. He doesn't need to be labeled still worthy of being a bad man. What the hell is that? What is your motto here? Boys, inform on your classmates. Save your hide. Anything short of that, we're going to burn you at the stake? Well, gentlemen, when the shit hits the fan, some guys run and some guys stay. Here's Charlie facing the fire, and there's George hiding in Big Daddy's pocket. And what are you doing? You're going to reward George and destroy Charlie.
Are you finished, Mr. Slade?
No, I'm just getting warmed up. I don't know who went to this place. William Howard Taft, William Jennings Bryan, William Tell, whoever. Their spirit is dead, if they ever had one. It's gone. You're building a rat ship here. A vessel for seagoing snitches. And if you think you're preparing these minnows for manhood, you better think again. Because I say you are killing the very spirit this institution proclaims it instills. What a sham. What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today? I mean, the only class in this act is sitting next to me, and I'm here to tell you, this boy's soul is intact. It's non-negotiable. You know how I know? Someone here, and I'm not going to say who, offered to buy it. Only Charlie here wasn't selling.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Out of order. Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that. You think you're merely sending this splendid foot soldier back home to Argon with his tail between his legs, but I say you are executing his soul. And why? Because he's not a bad man. Bad men. You hurt this boy, you're going to be bad bums. The lot of you. And Harry, Jimmy, Trent, wherever you are out there, fuck you too.
Stand down, Mr. Slade.
I'm not finished. As I came in here, I heard those words. Cradle of leadership. Well, when the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. And it has fallen here. It has fallen. Makers of men, creators of leaders, be careful what kind of leaders you're producing here. I don't know if Charlie's silence here today is right or wrong. I'm not a judge or jury, but I can tell you this. He won't sell anybody out to buy his future. And that, my friends, is called integrity. That's called courage. Now, that's the stuff leaders should be made of. Now, I have come to the crossroads in my life. I always knew what the right path was. Without exception, I knew. But I never took it. You know why? It was too damn hard. Now, here's Charlie. He's come to the crossroads. He has chosen a path. Path. It's a path made of principle. that leads to character. Let him continue on his journey. You hold this boy's future in your hands, committee. It's a valuable future. Believe me. Don't destroy it. Protect it. Embrace it. It's going to make you proud one day, I promise you.
On the book ends of the show, I think I kind of sums it up here on a Wednesday night, Philo night. Wow. So we go into the big weekend, the Giants, Favre, the Jets, Miami, the whole thing. And I guess to kind of sum it up, I'll just put a little capper on it, a little Beatles music here to play us out here on a Wednesday night. Kind of feeling like this guy. I get you, man. I get you, John. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Mark saying thank you for giving the time and your space. Be yourself and be well. And as always, travel light through the darkness. See you again 9 o'clock next Wednesday night, Sapiens. Keep it real. SummerSpace.org. You can always email me, nakedsum@gmail.com. I sometimes check that. Only trying to get us some sleep. Spiral on, John. Spiral on, Sapiens. Take it easy.